name's Brian Tracy. I'm working my way to YMCA camp selling Rosamel Beauty Soap. And they started saying things to me that I had never heard before, like, I'm sorry, we can't afford it. It costs too much. We don't have the money in our budget. We don't have any cash right now. Could you come back in a week or a month or a year? And I'd say, okay, and I'd go to the next store, and they'd say the same things. We can't afford it. We can get it cheaper from your competitor. It costs too much. We don't have the money right now. Could you leave us some information, call us back at a later time, and so on. And what I found at that time and today is that that's what all customers say. They all go to customer school. In customer school, they all get together and they chant, we can't afford it. It costs too much. We don't have the money. We don't have the cash. Business is bad, and so on. And then you look at a company like Neiman Marcus, the deluxe department store, and they sell twin elephants for the front door for $50,000 a piece, and they're sold out weeks before Christmas. You look at the Rolls-Royce and the Mercedes dealerships and the Brooks Brothers and the Tiffany's and the jewelry stores, and they're all selling out like fire sales. People are spending unlimited amounts of money on things that they really want. So the first thing we know is that price resistance is a normal and natural part of selling. Everybody resists on the basis of price. Now, there's a reason for this. The simplest reason of all is that everybody has been burnt at one time. They paid too much for something, and they found it cheaper somewhere else, and it made them mad. You know, one of the rules is, once you've bought a product or service, stop shopping that product, because you're always going to find it cheaper somewhere else, and it'll just make you upset. But everybody's had that experience. And there's another thing, is that we value freedom very much. And one of the elements of freedom is we have the freedom to buy things. And if we buy something and we pay too much for it, it diminishes our freedom to buy other things. And that makes us mad as well. So what you have to learn, and what I've learned over the years, and I've now sold products that cost thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and even millions of dollars. Biggest sale I ever negotiated, I sat down with a group of people around a board table, and I negotiated and got a check for $3.4 million. And they said, well, it's a lot of money. We can't afford it. We don't have the cash. We're not sure. Could we delay it? Could we think about it? And I sat there myself against them, and I got them to agree to give me a check for $3.4 million. And I walked out with it. I can tell you, when I took it back to my boss, I had a very happy boss. So is it possible to sell higher price products against lower price competition? The answer, of course, is yes, because it's being done all day, every day, hundreds of thousands and millions of times. Your job is simply to learn how to do it. So we find that price arises as an issue in almost every sale. By the way, please don't take any notes, because I'm going to send you all the notes, and plus I'm going to send you the CD version so that you'll be able to replay it. So don't take notes, just listen to my voice and just think about how these ideas might apply to your sales and to your business. Price arises as an issue in almost every sale because people have almost all been brought up in families where money was an issue. They didn't have a lot of money. My friend Susie Norman says that people have issues or goblins or gremlins with regard to price. And even if it's a hamburger or a newspaper, people look at it and say, well, I wonder if I can afford that. Usually it goes back to early childhood. So they ask, the first question that people ask is, how much is it? But the reason is because money is a common denominator. When you speak to a person about a product or service, what they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out, based on their knowledge and understanding of things, how your product or service fits in to our economic and commercial world. So when you say, well, you know, how much is that? It's just a matter of interest. It's not as if it's a showstopper, as we say. It's just a matter of interest. Why? How much is it? Then I can relate that to other things I've bought and other products and services. Also, price is a form of information. We're constantly seeking information. The whole stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, every single market is exchanging information on the relative values of stocks, bonds, products, services, and so on, and intelligent people like information. The first thing they want to know is, how much does this cost in comparison or relative to other things? Is it high? Is it low? Is it relatively inexpensive, very expensive, and so on? When you ever, if you're selling any type of product or service, you'll say, well, what do you say? You say, I sell cars. Well, what kind of cars do you sell? First thing a person wants to know is what kind of price range? Do you sell Rolls Royces or do you sell Hyundais? In other words, it's just a form of information. And the final point to start off with, is that everything costs more than is expected. Everything costs more than is expected. Nobody was ever going to say to you, wow, that's cheap. I wish I could take more, because for some reason, people think that their prices and their products and services should go up every year, but they're astonished when yours do. So here's a good piece of news. Price is seldom the reason for buying anything. In a Harvard study, they found that only 6% of sales in our society are determined by price alone. Is price a factor? Of course. Is price the determining factor? Only in 6% of cases. And what do we call a product or service that is denoted solely on the basis of price? Well, it's called a commodity. And what is the characteristic of a commodity? A commodity is undifferentiated. In other words, one is the same as another. Tweedledum is the same as Tweedledee. Now, in the commodity markets, silver ingots are a standard size, weight, and quality. Orange juice, Florida orange juice futures, sow bellies, number 30 sulfur crude oil, they're all identical. The only way that you can distinguish them apart is by asking how much is the price. And that's determined by price, demand, supply, delivery costs, and so on. Here's the point. Nothing that you sell is a commodity. Nothing that you sell is a commodity. Sometimes people say, my product is the same as everybody else's in the market. Well, the very fact that you're selling it makes it different from any other product or service in the market. Sometimes I speak to friends in real estate or even life insurance, and they say, well, you know, my products are available on the Internet. They're available on the multiple listing service and so on. I said, fine, the product itself is out of your control, but the relationship that you form with your customers is irreplaceable. And you know something? The highest paid salespeople in every field, even if their products are available everywhere else, are the ones who form the best relationships. So sometimes that's the very best way to differentiate yourself, and that's totally under your control. Well, 68% of customers, according to studies of 55,000 customers, lied about price as being the reason for not buying. They asked them, you said that you couldn't buy it because you couldn't afford it and have the money and so on. They went back afterwards and they said, what was the real reason? Well, the real reason was I didn't like it, or I decided to buy it from someone else, or I was waiting for a sale to come through. In other words, the price reason was not the reason. They said, well, why did you say that to the salesperson? They said, well, that's the easiest way to get rid of salespeople. Just tell them you can't afford it. Just tell them you don't have the money. And salespeople just collapse and go away somewhere else, like dogs with their tails between their legs. But one of the things I do, when people say, well, price, it costs too much or everything else, I say, Mr. Prospect, would you take it if it was free? That stops them. And they may say, well, yeah, if it was free, I would take it. You say, why? What would you do with it if it was free? What would you do with it if you had, well, I do this and I do that. And what they'll often tell you is what you must convince them that they will get in order to get them to buy. And if you had all the money in the world, would you buy it? Sometimes when you say that, they say, oh, no, I wouldn't buy it. And what does that mean? It means they don't want it. So its price is really not the issue. Most price problems today are created by salespeople, because when you start off selling, the very first thing you get is sales resistance, and so you build up a conditioned response, almost like a flinch when the customer brings up price or cost, and you become a little bit uneasy. We say that most salespeople have what is called price neurosis. They're a little bit neurotic about the price. Somebody says, well, how much is it? And you say, oh, and you start to tense up, and your stomach gets tense, and you squeak out the answer. And the prospect starts, what's going on here? How come this person's so funny about the price? Maybe there's something wrong with the price. Maybe the price is too much. Maybe I'm going to be in a situation where I'm going to become overcharged. But in interviews with tens of thousands of customers, we find that price ranks at the bottom as a factor when interviewing customers. I gave a talk to a large company that sold garage doors, electrical garage doors for homes, but mostly for industry. And their distributors were always complaining, the price is too high, the price is too high, the customers are always complaining about the price. This is one of the highest quality electric garage door opening companies in the country. So they went out and they spent $50,000 and they interviewed the last year's worth of customers nationwide. And they asked them, why did you buy this garage door? And the answers we give, and they'll give you some of them later, is quality, beauty, utility, performance, reputation, fits beautifully with our exterior decorations or colors and so on. And they say, well, wait a minute, what about the price? And they say, oh, yeah, price was important, but price was not the key. We could have got it cheaper from someone else, but we couldn't have got the quality, the service, the durability, the delivery, and so on and so forth. Price was always mentioned last in every survey. And every survey that's done, you go back to the customers, you ask, why did you buy it? They will virtually never say, I bought it because it was cheap. Now, why is that? You see, customers today don't want the lowest price, because the lowest price usually means poor quality. Poor quality means it'll break down. If it breaks down, it means they'll have hassles and difficulties, and they'll be frustrated and unhappy and wish they'd never bought it at all. Customers want a fair price. So I always say, this is a very good price. This is a very fair price. This is an excellent price. This is a great deal. This is a competitive price in today's market. That's what customers want. They just want to make sure they're not leaving anything on the table. And your job is to make it clear, hey, this is a great price. By the way, who are the most successful retailers in the history of man on earth? And the answer is Walmart. And why is that? Because Walmart offers everyday low prices, always low prices. So whenever you go to Walmart, you can be sure that whatever you buy, you'll never go back and find it at a lower price. And because customers can go there and be comfortable that they're getting a good price, a fair price, a competitive price, a reasonable price, a decent price, a low price, they'll buy the handfuls. And Walmart will be the first company probably this year to do $1 billion a day. If it keeps on growing, it'll be the first $1 trillion company in history. Because why? It's because they take away the price fear. Is Walmart always the lowest prices? No, but their prices are everyday low prices. Their prices are fair prices, good prices, decent prices, like yours. Now, when the customer says it costs too much, you always have to ask, in comparison to what? And what we find is that the customer says it costs too much because of several different reasons. The first is the customer's overall financial condition or situation. In other words, the customer just may be going through a financial shortage right now. So relative to their current situation, they don't have the money. Sometimes, by the way, you say it costs too much, and you say, in comparison to what? Or how do you mean? I'll come to that in a second. They say, well, we just used up our whole budget. You say, well, if we can bill it into next year's budget period, would you take it? Often they'll say, geez, could you bill us next year for this? Now, this could be the last part of the year. If you could bill it next year when they have the cash available, then you can make a deal. The second in comparison is the customer's financial situation at the moment. Sometimes their momentary situation is poor. They just exhausted their cash. It's the end of the month. Payday isn't here for a couple of days and so on. So they say it costs too much in comparison or relative to that. Or the third reason they can say it costs too much is because of the amount the customer has mentally allocated for your product. Some people don't upgrade their information. So what happens is a person sees your product for sale a year ago and they register that amount, then they look at it today and it's more expensive. And they say, well, that's not what I thought it costed. I'll give you a very interesting example. My wife and I stayed at a motel in India, part of California, at my daughter's horse show recently. And we stayed at a beautiful Embassy Suites. The cost was $229 a night. And then the following week was the grand championship and the whole valley was full. Same room was $829 a night. So I mentally allocated $229. They said, well, next week it'll be $829, and all the rooms are sold. Almost gives you a heart attack. So the fourth reason why people will say it costs too much is in comparison to what the customer thinks your product or service is supposed to cost. Most amazing thing, when we were giving seminars that were $495 for the weekend, we do a complete presentation and explain everything that they got, books and tapes and courses and lunches and meals and refreshments and everything else, and said, please enroll at the back of the room. And so this fellow went back and he laid down a $5 bill. And he said, could I have some my change? And the person said, what do you mean? You said it was $495. Yes, it's $495. He said, you guys must be out of your mind. He said, have you ever been to a seminar, professional business seminar before? Well, as a matter of fact, no, he hadn't. He'd never been to anything kind of seminar before. He was a high school dropout. So relative to what he thought, the price was completely unreasonable. As you can imagine, we started the seminar without him. The fifth reason why they say it costs too much is relative to what prices your competitors are asking for comparable articles. And you run into this all the time. Well, your competitor only asks for this. Well, they're comparing apples and oranges because what you are selling is probably superior. It has it's better quality, it's better made, it has better guarantees and warranties, better reputation, and so on. Well, they compare your high-quality product to what they've seen competitors advertising. And remember this, most customers are ignorant. They're not bad or malicious. They're not trying to get a special deal. They just have no idea of the difference between products until someone, comes along and explains it to them. They say that the major business of the salesperson is to differentiate, is to show the customer why the customer is actually better off buying a higher-priced product, that the value, the benefits that they get are greatly in excess of the difference in price. That's why, by the way, that some of the very most successful companies in the world sell very high-priced products against low-priced competitors, because their salespeople don't defend the price. They just let the price go. They concentrate on explaining, yes, it is more expensive, but let me tell you why, and why it makes sense for you to actually pay more money for it than to try to get it cheaper. Now, the sixth reason they say it costs too much is because they're looking at the prices of alternatives or substitute products. In other words, they're looking at something else that they can get that's similar. For example, you could be offering a vacation in a cabin in Colorado, and it could cost $300 a night. And they could say, geez, I could stay at a motel in Mexico for $100 a night. So they're comparing alternatives. Or they're looking at substitute products. For example, if you go on a cruise ship, it costs $500 or $600 a night per person. Well, it may cost you $500 or $600 a night for a whole family to go to a vacation at Disneyland. So, in other words, it's always the price of alternatives. And people are always thinking, what else can I do with the same money? What else can I spend it on to get the same level of satisfaction? Now, the seventh reason they say it costs too much is because it's more than what the customer thinks you ought to charge him or her. The customer thinks that because they're a friend or a first-time customer or they've known you in the past or they're a big company, and sometimes big companies think that you should sell them stuff for less because they're big companies. So they think you should charge them less even though you charge other people more. That's why you always have to ask questions, which I'll give you the questions to ask in a couple of seconds. Now, number eight is the customer may object to any price as a matter of habit. There's some people who grow up in families where the father or the mother is a real bargainer. So they think it's cute to just bargain. And whatever price you give them, they go into a flinch. They go, oh, my, that's expensive. Wow, that's far more than I expected to pay. And it's interesting. Many salespeople, if they have flexibility, drop the price immediately. You go into a used car a lot, and they say, how much is the price? They say $3,000. They say, oh, that's too much. I can get it somewhere else. How about $2,500? Sometimes the price will drop $500 with just simply one objection. And here's the thing, is if people have been successful grinding salespeople down in the past, then they're going to try it on you. And they'll be shocked at your price, and they'll offer you vastly less than your price. And what you do is you just listen and smile and don't react. Now, the ninth reason people say your product costs too much is because the customer may object as a strategy to get a lower price. It's just part of their strategy. And many companies, by the way, actually send their decision makers to special courses on negotiating to grind down salespeople who call on them. And one of the first things that they're taught to do is to lowball the price. Ask for a lower price and just see what sort of response you get. Now, number 10 reason they say it might cost too much is the customer may not want to buy your product or service right now, so he challenges your price to avoid telling you that he can't buy it right now. Maybe he can't afford it right now. Maybe he doesn't have the money right now, but he doesn't want to tell you because you're a salesperson. Now, the 11th reason they say it costs too much is it could be that your customer doesn't want to buy at all. And this is really important. It's really important that when you're dealing with a customer, you make sure that the customer has genuine interest. The customer wants to buy. Other than that, what they do is just play with you. And that's why sometimes you say, you know, if this was half price, would you take it? And sometimes they'll say no. If it was free, would you take it? Sometimes they'll say no. I wouldn't even take it if it was free. Why? It's because they don't want to buy it at all. So what is important to remember with regard to rejections and challenges with regard to price is it's not personal. Don't ever take it personally. And by the way, don't question your product or service. In my experience, your products or services are very well priced, and they're priced by very intelligent people in your business. And they've given a lot of thought, what we call sweaty palms time. They give a lot of thought to pricing, to raising or lowering prices. And so never be ashamed of your prices, and we'll talk about this in a minute. Now, the 12th way, the 12th reason they say it costs too much is because your customer may not want to buy but doesn't want to tell you the real reason. Maybe they've committed to buying from your competitor. Maybe the competitor is their brother-in-law, and they've committed to paying more for a lesser quality product, and they just don't want to tell you because you'll know what's happened. And finally, the 13th reason why they say it costs too much is because your customer wants it and needs it, but he expects you of overcharging him for it. He thinks you're just asking for too much money, and so he quibbles about the price. Again, it's an attempt to get you down. Remember, the one thing you hate, the one thing customers hate, is paying too much when they don't have to. In fact, they say there's two common fears that affect all Americans and probably all people worldwide. Number one is the fear of being hustled, being manipulated, being rushed into a decision that is not in their favor. The second one, though, is the fear of being taken advantage of. And why is that? It's because we've all been taken advantage of in the past, and we didn't like it. When we learned about it later, we didn't like it. It made us mad. So we resolved, by gum, that's not going to happen again. Now, when the customer seems to be over-concerned about price and determined to get the lowest possible price, no matter what, in other words, what we call a pure price buyer, and sometimes as many as 30% of people who buy for companies are pure price buyers. It's all they care about is low price. They don't care about your differentiators. They don't care about your unique benefits or advantages. All they want is the lowest price, the lowest price. Well, what we've found is when you deal with these people, and these people are usually working for second-rate organizations, and very often, unfortunately, they're second-rate people, is we find that pure price buyers complain 50% more than other customers. Your regular customers who pay the regular price are usually pretty good, but the pure price buyers complain all the time. They don't like this, and they don't like that. Sometimes they call up, and we've had these, and they harass your staff, and they're rude, and they slam the phone down, and they get angry with you because of little petty things. There's something about a pure price buyer that indicates a defect in their program. As we say, their grits ain't in the center of the plate. Another part about pure price buyers is they have no loyalty. They'll switch to a lower price competitor at the first opportunity. You'll often work hard to kind of satisfy a price buyer by getting the price down to the very lowest amount possible, and they'll look for every way. If I bought 1,000, how much would you charge me per each? And you say, well, if you bought 1,000, we could get the price down to this. They say, good, I'll take one and get the other 999 later. Very common strategy for a price buyer. But they have no loyalty. As you work hard to get them as a customer, they will walk if somebody offers them a lower price anywhere. Here's another thing. Pure price buyers want full services without paying for them. If you offer them a bare bones product or service, then they'll want services and they'll want warranties and guarantees and they'll want support and backup. They'll want all the things that your full price paying customers want. The fourth key is pure price buyers take all your selling time. Now, this is a really dark thing that just drives me crazy. Is what they do is they want you to come back and come back again, and they want to talk to you, and they want to talk to you again. They want to negotiate, and they want to review your prices, and they want you to sharpen your pencil. And then they ask you to do proposals. And could you do us a proposal for this? And could you break out the numbers? And they take all your selling time and drag it out and drag it out. And at the end, usually they don't buy. And if they do buy, the profit that you make is so small, you walk away feeling sometimes a little bit unclean. Here's another problem. Pure price buyers are poor payers. Once you finally close the deal and you walk away, then they don't pay the bills. And your boss has to send you back. You have to go and get these people to pay. And they send the checks in the mail, and we had a cash shortage this month. And they always have excuses not to pay you. Here's another thing that pure price buyers do is they tell others how little they paid you. They brag to other people how much they ground you down to. And you know, There's a rule with regard to rumors that says that rumors travel at the speed of summer lightning, and they get to the worst possible person who could hear them in absolutely rapid speed. And you know who it is? It's going to end up that your pure price buyer, that you ground your prices down and you finally gave them the best deal you ever did, he's going to be sitting next to your best customer who's paying full price at a social engagement the next night and bragging about how well he did. I have seen experiences like this all the time, where people brag about how much they were able to get the prices down from people that I've been paying full price to. Here's another thing, they drive away your best customers. Sometimes you say, well, we have these people as a customer. People say, well, if you have those kind of people as a customer, we don't want to be your customer. And here's another thing, and this used to bug me, is they pick your brains and they steal your information and ideas. They ask you about what's going on in the market. They ask you about competition. They ask you what else is going on. Is they keep picking your brains. They want to know lots and lots of stuff. And in the end, sometimes they don't buy at all, or if they do buy, there's no profit in it. So that brings us to part two of our time together, and we call this selling on non-price issues. Selling on non-price issues. And what we've found in interviewing tens of thousands of customers is that virtually all buying decisions are made on non-price issues, 94% of buying decisions. So we say that there are basically seven factors that are more important than price in making a buying decision. And once you hear them, you realize. First is utility, which means that your product or service is suitable and it conforms to the customer's standards and requirements. Let me give you a simple example. Shoes. You know, you try on a pair of shoes. If the shoes don't fit, if they're too big or too tight, then there's no reason, no way that you're going to buy them. It doesn't matter what the price is, because they're just the wrong for you. They're the wrong size, the wrong conformance to your standards, and so on. A person may be selling a software program that goes with Apple, but you've got Microsoft. A person may be selling something that doesn't fit on your car or go with your decor. It could be an absolutely beautiful piece of furniture, but it doesn't fit in with the rest of your decor. So utility, suitability, the fact that it fits is more important than price. Second of all is services. Is the services you give. When you make it clear, and one of the things I always tell salespeople to say in the middle of a sales conversation, by the way, we give wonderful after-sales service. I call this a by the way. It's a throw-in. Oh, by the way, we give wonderful after-sales service. We're fast, we're dependable, we're predictable. You can always count on us. We're available 8, 9, 10 hours a day. We have a hotline and so on. Sometimes people will pay vastly more for the services. Interesting point. IBM had a wonderful reputation, still does, for having excellent customer service. But at no time in their history, when they became the biggest computer company in the world, had 80% of the world market by the mid and late 80s, at no time were they cheaper or better or faster than their competitors. Their competitors were superior in every scale. But IBM had a fabulous reputation for services, because if your computer broke down, they would be there within 2 hours. Within 2 hours, you'd have somebody out there to fix it that fast. And people who didn't know a lot about computers knew that if my computer broke down and I was dependent upon it, it was really important that it get serviced. And IBM just focused on great services and higher prices. Now, a third factor that's more important than price is support. You emphasize helpfulness, speed, and dependability. You give workshops. You have hotlines. You answer questions. You show people how to use your products and services. The support is really valuable. Some time ago, my secretary at that time, Mavis, brought me a proposal to buy a computer. And it was the same computer from three different companies. They were, you know, value-added retailers. And one version cost $3,000. One second version cost $3,500. The fourth version cost $4,000. And I said, Mavis, I said, what's the difference between these three? The stuff is the same. They said, well, the one that's $3,000, they drop it off at the door. We unpack it, set it up ourselves. The one that's $3,500, they not only bring it, but they set it up for us and give me an in-service and show me how to use it. And what about the third one, I said, the $4,000 one? Well, these people bring it, set it up, teach me how to use it, come back once a week for a month, and are available to me for 6 months in case I have any problems or questions. I say, well, which one do you want to get? She said, the $4,000 one. And I said, okay, if that's the one you want, that's the one we get. Because the support services for my secretary, for my office, was worth 33% more than the bare bones coming out of the box. So remember, these are the reasons, real reasons that people buy. Now here's the fourth benefit or attribute that's more important than price, is terms. You have favorable down payments. You'll accept the old one in as a trade-in. You'll take a minimum down payment and stretch the payments over 36 months. You have good billing systems. You bill them according to their own billing cycle. You charge low interest rates. So sometimes people will buy all the product they can if the terms are good. So your prices can be higher, but your terms can be better. A fifth is ease of use. If you offer trouble-free ownership, if the person buys it, it works easily for them. And if they have any problems at all, you are in there to help them fix it up. So it's easy to use. People like hassle-free. One of the best things you can say is, you know, once you buy from us, you never have to worry about it again. You never have to think about it again. It costs a little bit more, but you have no further hassles, as we take care of it for the rest of the time that you own it. People will often buy on that basis and pay a premium price. Now, the sixth is safety. It's a safe, secure decision. You offer security, worry-free, time-saving products and services. Sometimes the quality of your products and services is so good that they work much better with fewer breakdowns than anybody else's, and that's worth paying for. And finally, maintenance. If something goes wrong, you offer fast repairs, fast assistance, fast callbacks. You're pretty good about that. There's nothing that makes customers more happy than to know if they do have a problem, you'll be right there. I'll give you an interesting example. When Lexus was breaking into the U.S. market, and they were a new car, mid-level luxury car, and so on, now the most popular, one of the most popular cars in the country, is what they did is they offered 24-hour service and maintenance, road maintenance. And they also built in a telephone in a car. And they said, look, if your wife or kids are out and they have a problem, all you have to do is phone. And 24 hours a day, you phone an 800 number and there'll be a repair truck or a tow truck out to that car within 60 minutes. And people actually bought the car because of that additional safety feature. As it happens, the car works so well that it never broke down. So, but it was a wonderful way to sell high-quality, highly expensive cars, $10,000 more than a comparable car, and they just bought them like hotcakes. They just tore them off the market. You had to wait. Eventually, when I went to get one, I had to wait 2 or 3 months until the car came from Japan because they were so backward. Now, you and your company, this brings us to another part, you and your company can create values that increase the prices that you can charge. For example, high-level advertising dramatically increases the prices you can charge. Why? Is people prefer the familiar to the unfamiliar. And just the very fact that you've been advertising a lot, that they've seen the advertisements, that the advertisements appeared where they go, that they saw them on the Super Bowl or on a billboard or in a newspaper or magazine or direct mail, that's why steady advertising is commonplace amongst the most successful companies. Because when you walk in and you say, I'm from ABC Company, say, oh, yeah, I saw your ad. I received something in the mail. I passed your billboard. What that does is it raises your credibility. And when you raise your credibility with high-level advertising, you lower the perception of risk in buying from you. And you actually cause the customer to feel that your product or service is worth more money. Now, let me give you an interesting strategy that small businesses can use. There are, for example, regional editions of Time magazine, Newsweek magazine, other magazines. Now, if you were to advertise nationally in Time magazine, it may cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. But if you were to advertise in the Southern San Diego version of Time magazine, it may only cost you a few hundred dollars. So then when you call on your prospect, you can say, "This, have you seen our advertisement? We're advertised in Time magazine. Take a copy along of Time magazine." People say, you're advertised in Time magazine, and people will be impressed by the fact that you're advertised in a national publication, which means your product must be pretty good. You must have a lot of confidence in your product if you could put that kind of clout behind it. So many people will often take a newspaper ad, take a local publication and say, did you see our ad? Of course, they've not seen your ad, but the very fact that you're advertising increases the perceived value of what you're selling and lowers price resistance. Now, a second way that you can create values is when you have an excellent reputation and a good name, you can charge more. I'll give you an example. Probably the most successful jewelry chain in the U.S. is Tiffany's. Tiffany's is, you know, publicly traded. You go into Tiffany's and you buy a little silver napkin ring, and it can cost you $49. If you go around the street to another jewelry, you can pay, you know, you can pay $14 for that or $9.95, and it's the identical silver. It's identical. It's not the same style because Tiffany's, you know, puts a little bit of a wrinkle into it. But Tiffany's can charge 5 and 10 times as much. Why? It's because they have an incredible reputation for quality. So one of the things that you do when you talk to your prospects is you say, you know, we have a reputation for tremendous quality. Or you can use the people say. People say that the quality of our products is the best they've ever seen. People say this is the highest quality they've ever experienced. People say. Whenever you say people say, you actually build reputation. People say we give wonderful after-sale service. People say our products are really easy to use. People say that we give the best support that they've ever seen for a product or service, people say. And what's even better is if you have actual customers who have said this. So-and-so at ABC Company said this just the other day. So-and-so at XYZ Company told me this just the other day and then quoted back from to them. So another way is good public relations. Good public relations, where it's giving your company a public a good image. That's where you get involved in community affairs and your name appears at baseball games and tennis games or charitable things. People in our society are positively predisposed to companies that seem to support worthwhile charities. And that's why you see so much of it. But here's another thing that's really important is excellent sales materials. You know that beautiful sales materials, 100-pound stock, 4-color, glossy stock, where you give people beautiful sales materials and they look at it, they say, this must be a substantial company. That's why we say it's very important that you have very stiff business cards, even colored business cards, beautiful brochures. Here's the rule. Is your sales materials, whatever your customer sees or touches, have to be equal to or better than your best competitors. And sometimes a little company with nothing going for them, just starting off, can take a jump forward by having beautiful sales materials. Just make sure that everything your customer sees and touches about your business is beautiful. Once Aristotle Onassis, in his book, How to Be Rich, said even if you have to get the smallest office in the entire building, locate in a building that's highly respected in the community. Even if you have to get a broom closet, locate in that and use that as your address. Because why? People see that you have an address in that building, and that increases the desirability and lowers the price sensitivity of your product or service. And here's the final one. This is really neat. This changed my whole career. A way to create value is with professional selling. By becoming a really professional salesperson and doing a really good analysis, what we call the doctor of selling approach, where you do a thorough examination by asking questions about what the customer is doing, and then you do a diagnosis, and you come to a conclusion for the customer, this is the best choice, and then you make your prescription, is when you are a really professional salesperson, you're well turned out, positive image, you look really good, you speak well, you've done your homework, the things that we teach in our Brian Tracy University course on high-performance selling, whenever you have those things going for you, you increase the perceived value of what you sell. Poor, schlocky selling, unprepared selling, unprofessional, poorly prepared salespeople, not well-dressed, and so on, dramatically reduce the perceived value and increase price resistance. But professionals, like the IBM professionals, like the professionals that work for the big multi-jillion dollar companies, these people look like $1 million. When they go in, they're dressed beautifully, they're groomed beautifully, their shoes are polished, their nails are manicured, they look great, but they really focus intently on the customer, which causes the customer to feel that your product or service is worth more than your competitors. Well, price concerns diminish. They go down with three factors. Number one is buying desire. Is we say that emotions distort valuations. If a person has an intense emotion to own your product or service, if you're selling fire extinguishers and your prospect's hair is on fire, this means intense buying desire. Price sensitivity drops through the floor. That's why if you're traveling across country and you're really hungry and you see a place for food and that's the first one you've seen in 100 miles, boy, oh boy, you don't care what they charge. So we say that buying desire diminishes price sensitivity. A second thing that diminishes price sensitivity is shortages. If you say, you know, we only have one of these left, that dramatically increases the perceived value. Or we only have one of these left at this price. So in other words, we're almost out of these. When these are gone, there won't be any more for 3 months. We found that when customers see scarcity, and it's a major motivation, when customers see that there's a scarcity of your product or service or your product or service at that price, they often suddenly want it very badly. When we were in high school, remember we used to play the hard-to-get principle. the other person didn't even realize they were interested in you until you pretended that you weren't interested in them at all. And it's the same thing with your products and services. And finally, the third is the impatience, is the customer is impatient. They need it or they want it immediately. Then they're willing to pay more money. They're willing to pay a premium price. I remember when the Mazda Miata came out, the little red sports car, and they didn't manufacture enough of them, and they were selling for $30,000, and yet the dealers were charging $35,000 and $40,000 for them, and people were lining up and paying premium prices because they wanted them right away. They could get them if they waited 3 to 6 months when the new ones came off the boat, but in order to get them right away, people were willing to pay premium prices because they were impatient, and impatience is very common in our society. Okay, here are 10 ways to win the price wars against lower-priced competition. The first is to offer easy, problem-free ownership. Easy, problem-free ownership. It just emphasized that when you buy from us, you never have to worry about it again. I remember some years ago, a tailor came to me, a bespoke tailor. They take your measurements and make their clothes for you. And I said, how much is a suit like this? About $1,500 at that time. I said, geez, you know, you could buy one off the rack at Nordstrom's for, you know, $500 or even cheaper at Men's Warehouse. They said, yes, he said, but this suit will fit you like a glove. You will look absolutely great in it. People will stop you on the street and say you look great. And if ever you lose weight or gain weight, I will stand behind this and I'll take care of the suit. I'll take it back and I will alter it free. For the life of the suit, you'll never have to worry about it again. It'll always fit perfectly. On that basis, I bought the suits, and I bought a whole closet full of suits over the years just because he offered me problem-free ownership. Now, another way to win the price wars is to emphasize speed and dependability. We know today that there's a need for speed in our society. Is customers want speed. They want it fast. They want it in a hurry. And when you offer to get it to them quickly, we encourage you to always say, when a customer says, can you do this for me or that for me, you say, sure, right away. Get onto it right away. Get back to you right away. I'll send it out right away. Write it up right away. Get you that price right away. You move fast. And it's really amazing how impressive it is when you offer to move quickly. And price concerns just seem to diminish when you do things fast and dependably. Now, here's another thing. Customers have memories like elephants. They never forget anything. So if you say you will call them up on Monday, call them up on Monday. If you say you get back to them before noon on Tuesday, get back to them before noon on Tuesday, because for some reason they think about that. And if you do things dependably so that they can count on you, they consider your products or services are better and they're worth more money. And not only that, they will be much happier and less complaining about problems or difficulties if they know that you're fast and dependable. Now, well, the third is to be consistent and be predictable. If I were to ask you, what's the biggest fast food company in the world today, you know what you'd say? McDonald's, of course. 40,000 outlets worldwide. Why? It's because they're consistent and predictable. Are they the cheapest? No. Are they high quality? No. But you always know when you go into a McDonald's anywhere in the world that the food quality will be consistent, it'll be fresh, it'll be hot, it'll be good value, it'll be good, reasonably nutritious products, and so on. So in your business, consistency is sometimes more important than quality, and consistency is quality. People will pay more to know with confidence that you are consistent with everything you do. Every time we go there, the service or the food or the product is excellent. It's consistent. The fourth way to win the price war is to react quickly to their needs and concerns. If they have a question or a concern, get back to them fast like a switchblade. Customers love it when you move fast, especially if they have a problem. What about this? What about that? And you get back to them really fast and take care of them. Oh, here's another interesting thing, is your very best customers are your very best sources of new customers, your referrals. And the very best way to get referrals is to be referable. And the very best way to be referable is to respond to your customers' needs really fast. And when you respond to them really fast, they want their friends to have the same experience. Another way to win the price wars is to give accurate delivery times and emphasize reliability. Do you remember when there's the joke about the person whose family member was kidnapped, and they knew that it was a television or a cable vision repair person because he said that he wanted the he wanted the ransom between 8 in the morning and 6 at night. And that's how they used to be until Congress intervened. They said, we'll be there between 8 in the morning and 6 at night. Will there be somebody there? And people waited all day. Guy would show up at any time. Now they give you a time. They'll be there at 11 o'clock or within 30 minutes on either side because Congress got involved. Because why? It's because they weren't the delivery times, service times weren't accurate. But if you say you'll do it at a specific time and you're always there, they love it, and they'll pay you more, and they will resist lower-priced offers from your competitors. Another way to win the price wars is to demonstrate the expertise and competence of the sales representative. The more the customer realizes that you really know your stuff, you're really smart about what you do, you've really done your homework, you really understand your product or service on the market, the more they're willing to pay you for what you sell. And I can't tell you how important this is today, because why? It raises your credibility. And when you raise your credibility, you lower the fear of making a mistake in buying from you. Here's another way to win the price wars is make regular and predictable service calls. If you say you'll call once a month, call once a month, either live or in person. Is when they know that you're checking to make sure that they're happy, that increases the value of buying from you again. Here's another way to win the price wars is to offer a complete product or service selection, which enables the customer to do one-stop shopping with you. It's interesting, you'll find good clothing stores have everything that a person will need to dress from head to toe when they go in there. They have it all, so you don't have to go somewhere else. One of the great success stories in the world is the story of Caterpillar, the Earth Movers. And the founder of Caterpillar, many years ago, sat down with a group of business people and said, I have a wonderful idea to build a company that will become the biggest and best company in the world, and I want $1 million each from each of you as an investment in this company. There were 21 people in the meeting. This was back several decades ago. Well, he said, let me explain what we'll do, is we will become the preeminent earth-moving company in the world. We will have every single machine that is used to move earth in our lineup. And up to that time, earth-moving machines were made by Ford, made by International Harvester, made by John Deere, big, small, and so on. I said, we will specialize not in tractors or cars or trucks, just in earth-moving equipment. And so they have earth-moving equipment, backhoes, specialized equipment that they only sell one of in a year. Some others they sell hundreds of. And they said, well, why? It's because we offer one-stop shopping. No matter what piece of earth-moving equipment a customer will require, we offer that piece of equipment, even if we only sell one a year. Emphasizing to your customer, when they deal with you, you take care of them because you have everything that they need, dramatically increases the value of anything you sell. Now, another way that you can win the price wars is explain the reasons and the importance of the quality you offer, the quality of your product, the quality of your services, the quality of your company, the quality of your people, the quality of your processes. In other words, don't assume that the customer knows why it's great quality. Sometimes you have to explain it. You have to explain it in detail. This is why it behooves you, because we use titanium welds in our motherboards. That means that they can never overheat, burn out, and cause your computer to stop and have to be repaired, and you lose information. Explain to people. Sometimes people are not aware of why it is in their best interest to pay you more money than to save money somewhere else. And finally, a way to win the price wars is to offer guarantees and warranties and backup on what you sell. There's nothing gives a customer more confidence than for you to stand behind the product or service 100%. By giving guarantees, warranties, no matter what happens, we'll take care of you. Now, there are seven critical categories that determine purchase decisions. I'm going to give them to you in what we call the descending order of importance. The first factor that determines purchasing decisions, number one, top of the hit parade, is emotions. We say the customers don't buy the product or service as much as they buy the feeling or the experience that the customer expects to enjoy by buying, owning, and using your product or service. In other words, it's the feeling. So if a customer gets the feeling, when you say, you know, you will feel wonderful with this, or you'll have a wonderful sense of confidence or security, or you'll feel really exhilarated when you drive this car or use these skis, when you describe the feeling that the person will have, that is the number one reason why people buy, is the emotional anticipation of enjoying the benefits of the product or service. Remember this, it's so important, is nobody cares what your product is. They don't care how it was made, how it's produced, the background of your company, the people who work for you. Nobody cares what it is. They only care what it does. And they only care what it does to enhance the quality of their lives, and especially to make them feel better. Customers buy how they anticipate that they will feel once they made the buying decision. Will they feel happy? Will they feel relieved? Will they feel secure? How will they feel? And if you can describe a customer, you know, I was just talking to one of my customers, and he said after he got this, he felt so secure and so much at peace because he had this. You describe the feeling that another customer had, and sometimes that transfers like electricity. Now, here's the second factor that determines buying decisions or category, and we call it improvement. Is people buy improvement more than anything else. They will buy the impact of your product or service on the customer and his or her work or personal life. So in other words, how will it improve their personal life? Will it make them thin? Will it make them rich? Will it make them beautiful? Will it give them more energy? Will it enable them to do their work better and get greater results and so on? In other words, what will be the improvement? Interesting, for the last 15 years I've been studying high-tech going back into the 90s and the boom, and I'm not a high-tech person. But one of the things I found was simply this, is that all high-tech is aimed at improving the speed and quality of the performance or the company's activities. Is everything is aimed at improving the speed, and each new product or service enables a customer to get a result faster. Whether it's a new improvement in a cell phone or in a computer or PC or iPod or something else, everything is aimed at improving the speed of communications so that customers can get what they want faster. So it's very important when you talk to your customers, you talk to them in terms of the appreciation or the improvement. How will this improve your life or work? What will it do to change your life or work in a positive way? Not what it is, but what it will do. Now, the third factor that determines purchasing decisions is performance, which is how your product or service actually works in practice. And performance means that it really works. It really does the job. So focusing on performance is really, really important. And explaining how it performs better than your competitors, how the performance is such that it's worth the extra premium in price. The fourth category that determines buying decisions is the specific result or benefit. The tangible event or condition that comes about from using your product or service. You see on television today, they have these belts. They're supposed to vibrate, and you put them on, and you walk around, and they vibrate, and you become thin. So they show you the before and the after. And if you believe that, I've got some swampland for you in Florida. But the fact is that they emphasize the results or benefit. A person has a headache, and they show you, take the pill, and you feel happy again. Or you go to a resort and you feel relaxed and romantic and loving and so on. So they emphasize the benefit that you will enjoy, and people will pay a premium for a benefit, but very little for a product. Now, the fifth category that determines sales is what is called the special attribute. And this is really important. It's the particular quality that your customer remembers after everything else, and it's usually your unique selling proposition. Every product or service has something that it offers to customers that no other product or service offers. And this unique selling proposition is something that gives a special benefit or advantage to the customer that the customer... For example, in many cases, your unique selling proposition can be just the fact that you are well-known to the customer and the customer likes and trusts you, or that your business is convenient, or that you have a fabulous reputation. But let me give you an example using the Lexus. A friend of mine bought a new car, and he got called up by a Lexus dealer who was also a friend of his. He said, come in and take a look at my car. He said, I don't need a car. I just bought one. He said, well, come in and take a look at the new Lexus anyway. So the salesman knew this fellow, knew that he loved opera music. So he had an opera CD, and he said, I want you to just sit in this car, and I want you to listen to something and see what you think about it. Now, the Lexus has 8 speakers, so sitting inside a Lexus when it's properly tuned is like sitting inside a concert hall. And so he sat in, and he put in the CD, and he played this beautiful opera. And he sat in this car, And it was absolutely incredible. Eight beautiful speakers with this music playing. He got out of the car. He said, how much is the car? He said, what does it matter? He said, this has got the most beautiful sound of any car in the market. He said, you're right. Would you take mine as a trade-in? He traded in his new car, which is only 1 or 2 days old, and drove away with the Lexus. And he was telling us, it was quite amazing. His friend honed in on the one special attribute of the car that would cause him to buy or to change cars. So what is your unique selling proposition? What is it that you offer that nobody else has? What special benefit or value does your product or service or offer a customer that would cause them to buy from you? And whatever it is, be sure to emphasize it. Now, the sixth critical category that customers consider is comparisons. And it is the way you position your products or services against your competitors. So comparing is very important because you must always assume that your customer has looked at what else is available. So your job is to show that in comparing your product or service with others, here are the advantages and benefits. It's interesting, by the way, that men love a sales professional to show them the pros and cons of a variety of choices and then make a recommendation. Women like to be shown the pros and cons of a variety of choices and allowed to make their own recommendation. And finally, price. The last critical category is price. And price only means the meaning of the cost relative to other products or services or other uses of the same money. You know, there's the story of the fellow who's goes to his wife and he says, honey, what would you like for your birthday? And she said, well, she said, I don't know. She said, well, would you like some jewelry? Would you like a new car? Would you like some furs? Quite wealthy. She said, well, quite honestly, Harry, I'd like a divorce. And he said, no, honey, you don't understand. I wasn't planning to spend that much. The point is that every price is in comparison with what else is available and with what else you can do with the same amount of money. Now, so remember that price is always relative to value as perceived by the customer. It's a measure of his wants or her wants. It's a measure of his values, needs, and intensity of desire. Price in itself has no meaning. If you're talking to a millionaire, the price of your product or service may be a rounding error. It's irrelevant. They'll ask you about price, but price is not the decision for buying. So now we go to part three, and this is really critical. We call it neutralizing the price objection. We say price objections are often created or exaggerated by the salesperson because the salesperson has price neurosis. So first of all, be proud of your prices. When a person says, boy, that's expensive, you smile and agree and say, yes, it is expensive. As a matter of fact, it's more expensive than anything else in the marketplace today. And your point is, your next question, in other words, be proud of your prices. If you're having problems with being proud of your prices, go and visit your local Mercedes dealership on the weekend and go in and say, boy, that's expensive. They'll say, yes, are you in the right place? Of course, it's a Mercedes. Mercedes are expensive. Number two is answer price questions clearly. Look the customer in the eye with complete confidence and give them the price. How much is that? And if it's the proper place in the conversation, you say, well, it's exactly this, and give the price and give it clearly. Sometimes the price given with tremendous clarity and confidence diminishes price concerns. Remember also that higher prices signify higher quality. You say, we can't offer you the kind of quality and service that we offer you and lower the prices. You know the old saying, you can have any two, you can have quality, price, or services, but you cannot have all three. You can't have low price, high quality, and good service. If you're going to get good quality and good service, it has to be high price. You say, which of the three do you want? High quality, great customer service, or low price? And customers will always say they want the quality because the rule is if you can afford to buy quality, you can't afford not to. Explain the reasons that others buy from you at higher prices. You say, I appreciate your price concern, but let me tell you why other people pay more to buy from us, knowing they could get it for less. And there's very specific reasons. For example, and you explain the reasons that you know or that your customers have given you for buying from you. And best of all, use testimonials from satisfied customers who selected your higher-priced product over lower-priced offerings. What I used to do, by the way, it was very helpful to me, is I go to my best customers and I say, look, you bought from me and you could have got it cheaper somewhere else. Are you happy? They say, yes. Would you write me a letter to that effect? Would you write me a letter that says, you know, I looked at your product and I looked at your competitors and I decided to go with you even though you were more expensive and I'm glad I did because. And if you go back to your customers and ask for what I call a sweetheart letter, it's amazing what they'll give you. Use questions to deal with price objections. Never argue with a price objection. Never be defensive about a price objection. Instead, ask questions. You say, when the person says it costs too much, you say, how do you mean? I can get it cheaper somewhere else. How do you mean exactly? In other words, how do you mean is a powerful question that enables you to control the conversation and find out why they have a price concern. A second question you can ask is, when they say, I can get it cheaper somewhere else, you say, well, obviously you have a good reason for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what it is? Obviously you have a good reason for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what it is? Or you can say, when they say it costs too much, you say, why do you say that? Why do you say that? And listen silently to the answer. Never argue. Just say, why do you say that? It costs too much. Why do you say that? Well, I don't know. I say that to all the salespeople to see how they'll react. Because sometimes they don't have any basis for their objection. Or a person says, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. You say, well, why do you feel that way? Why do you feel that way? And just remain perfectly silent as though what the person has said is a fascinating comment. And you just love to know why they said it, what's behind it. Or when a person says, well, just tell me how much it costs and I'll tell you if I'm interested. You ever heard that? Just tell me how much it costs and I'll tell you if I'm interested. Well, we know that price out of place kills the sale. In other words, if you give the price too soon, you'll kill the sale because then the customer will only be thinking about the price and won't even be listening to your presentation. So when they try to ask you for the price right up in front, you say, Mr. Prospect, I know price is important to you. Could I come back to that in a moment? And often, almost always, they'll say, well, okay, I'm going to cover price thoroughly in just a second, but I need to ask you a couple of questions before I go into it. Could I come back to that in just a moment? They say, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. And now you keep control of the conversation. Now, the final way of asking questions is when I used to call up and I'd say, hello, my name is Brian Tracy, I keep getting this answer, how much is it? How much is it? How much is it? How much is it? And I couldn't get past it. I finally said, well, it's only $295 per person. Not interested. Slam. I'm not interested. Slam. So I just drove me crazy until I finally came up with this answer. When somebody asked me right from the get-go, how much is it? I'd say, Mr. Prospect, that's the best part. If it's not exactly right for you, whatever I'm calling you about, there's no charge. Prospect would stop. He said, what? I say, Mr. Prospect, it's not exactly right for you. There's no charge. He said, what do you mean? I said, Mr. Prospect, if it's not exactly right for you, you're not going to buy it, are you? He said, well, no damn way. Well, if you don't buy it, then there's no charge. And I'd stop them every single time and they'd say, all right, what is it then? That's exactly what I'd like to talk to you about, and I just need 10 minutes of your time to show you something, and you can decide for yourself. Now, explain the price clearly. Make the price appear fair and reasonable to your customer. In other words, explain why it costs what it costs. A price hanging out in the air is easy to knock down, but a price that's explained clearly is much more acceptable. Compare your price with higher-priced competitors. One of the things we know is that comparison is powerful. If you have a higher price competitor, you say, you know, our competitors charge $5,000 for this and ours is only $34.95. People feel, it's called comparison theory, people feel that when you first of all explain a higher price competitor and then offer your price, yours seems much cheaper in comparison. Give the reasons for your higher price. You say, yes, we do charge more than most people, but let me explain to you why and why it is in your best interest to pay more so that they know and that they can defend paying a higher price. They can go home and they say, well, I decided to buy it because of this. Minimize the price differences. Show that, you know, they're a higher price, but look at all the benefits you get. You get this and you get that and you can do this and you can do that. And you get all these other things that you can't get with our competitors. Another thing you can do is spread the price difference over the entire period of ownership and use. Person says, geez, that's $600 more than your competitor. You say, yes, that's a true statement. However, you'd use it for a minimum of 3 years, so it's $200 extra per year, and you would use it 250 days, so you divide that into 200. That works out to about 8 cents a day. So 8 cents a day difference, and look at all the benefits that you get. So minimize it and break it down. And IBM used to do this. They would break down the cost of one of their computers to the hour. They'd say, would you pay $3.53 an hour to have it a complete company operating system by IBM? and $3.53 an hour didn't seem like very much money. It worked out to thousands of dollars, but by breaking it down to the hour, it was astonishing how open people were to buying it. Illustrate the price difference with an alternative expenditure. Say you could spend the same amount of money on a carton of Coke. The difference would be the cost of one donut a day, or half a cup of coffee, or one visit to Starbucks twice a week. In other words, compare it with an alternative expenditure and show that it's really not that much of a difference. Another way to lower the price sensitivity, explain the high cost of not buying. Explain what happens if you don't buy. If you don't buy and this happens, if you don't get this, if you don't have this in place, and you were to have this happen, the cost could be tremendous. And show this tremendous comparison, the little price they pay now, but the tremendous difficulties that they would save. This, by the way, is how life insurance is sold, you know, or safety, any kind of safety equipment. And finally, continually emphasize the most valuable benefit your product or service offers. In your conversation, you'll have found out the hot button. You'll have found out the thing that your customer wants and needs, the attribute that's most important, your unique selling proposition. And what you do is you drive it home that when you own this product or service, you have this. I'll give you a simple example. My daughter is into riding horses, and she's started off with a horse, and then we had to replace it with a more expensive horse, and a more expensive horse, and a more expensive horse. And so people say, well, would you buy such an expensive horse? And I won't even tell you the cost. I said, because only on an expensive horse can my daughter win in competition against other expensive horses. She could work her heart out to become an excellent equestrian, but if she didn't have a good horse, she couldn't win prizes, which is really important to her. And it's important to me because it's important to her. So I'm willing to pay the extra money. And so when they came along and they said, this horse costs this amount of money, my only question is, can my daughter win prizes, win competitions on this horse? Absolutely. This horse has a reputation for winning competitions with riders like your daughter. That was all it took to pay 3, 4, 5 times as much as I ever dreamed I would pay for a horse. So remember this in conclusion, price is seldom the reason for buying or not buying anything. If price were the deciding factor, everyone would shop at Walmart. The fact that people purchase millions and billions of dollars worth of very expensive products and services every year is ample proof that you can sell your higher priced products against lower price competition by emphasizing the non-price qualities and values of what you offer. So remember, for the rest of your life, be proud that you sell expensive products and services. Be happy with it. Tell your customer that ours are more expensive than anybody else's, and by gum, we're proud of it. And when you say that, their concern diminishes or goes away completely. All they want to do is be sure that they're getting a good price, a fair price, a reasonable price, and a competitive price. Now, if you're ready, let us go to the lines. If you have any questions, please push star and O, and the operator will come on, deliver the question to me, and then I'll deliver it back to you. Let us begin.
One moment, please. Our first question comes from Terry. Terry, please state your question.
Is to deal with people that are questioning the price, is it best to play scripts and work on it before that comes up?
Well, what you have to do, Perry, is anticipate that they're going to ask you about the price and be prepared. And you know what I say when somebody asks me about the price? I always say, I'm glad you asked me that. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you mentioned that. I always respond by being happy that they asked me that question, because then they're interested in knowing why. Oh, you're happy? You mean you're not upset or anything else? And then have a good reason. Always give reasons for price. You don't have to never defend it. What you say is, yes, it does cost more than our competitors, but of course we have competitors that charge much more than this. But let me explain why thousands, hundreds of people buy it at this higher price, even though they know they can get it cheaper somewhere else. And then explain it.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any more questions?
Oh, I think you basically covered it all right there. I think just being prepared and knowing that I'm confident in what I'm presenting and having a background, and the presentation is really what it is, and the service, the customer service.
Yes.
It really is.
You'll find that all the most successful salespeople sell higher-priced products. Very few successful salespeople selling cheap products.
We just raised our product price 40%.
Yes.
We saw a little bit of a decrease, but the people that stayed with us are really proud with our product, and those are the referral-based people.
Well, that's wonderful.
It was a great coaching experience for us, and I've also ventured out into real estate, and so I'm also doing that with my real estate. A lot of the other agents around are dropping their commission, but my commission is going to be the highest commission because the service that you're going to get is going to be, you know, at the highest level.
That's right, and as a result of your excellent services, your sales price will be higher, so the customer is going to end up with more money at the end of the day.
Exactly, and more satisfied, because then there comes a referral from the satisfied customer.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Are there any more questions?
Not right now.
No, not from you, but for anybody else who's on the line.
Yes, our next question comes from Sean. Sean, please state your question.
You work with financial services reps. What matrix or focal point in terms of prospecting do you have them focus on or you found to be most successful?
Well, what I do, and I always start off with what I call the big picture. I say, first of all, you identify your product or service in terms of specialization. Is what does it do for a particular customer? How does it change or improve their lives? And then you say, all right, differentiate. Is how is your product or service, especially a financial service, different from anybody else's? And it could very well be that what makes it different is you, is your talents, your abilities, your ability to structure and tailor a financial plan for your client. Well, then the next question you ask is called segmentation, is who are the types of customers who most appreciate the work that you do for them? And look over your own experience and say, who are the people that I've worked with in the past that most appreciate me? Now some people have different personalities, that they get along with different types of people. I know some financial consultants wear cowboy boots and open-neck shirts, and they get along really well with ranchers. And I know other people wear three-piece suits, and they work with bankers, and other people wear excellent clothes and work with doctors and so on. You have to ask yourself, who are the customers that most appreciate what I do better than anybody else? And then the fourth stage is concentration. And then concentrate single-mindedly on your very best potential customers. And we explain this in High Performance Selling at Bryan Tracy University. We explain the importance of defining your product in terms of what it does, and then differentiating yourself from your competitors, and then focusing single-mindedly on those customers who can best buy from you. Identifying your ideal customer before you even approach the market.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Our next question comes from Charles. Charles, please state your question.
How would you, what strategies would you use to differentiate yourself if your customers are the Walmarts of the world? If you're dealing with buyers and customers that are essentially pounding you and your competitors, and your products are essentially commodity type products, if you're selling housewares, if you're manufacturing products and you're selling millions and millions of dollars of these products, but your customer is the Walmart, you know, customer.
Well, it's very difficult to do that unless, because if you're dealing with retailers, there's only one thing that retailers are concerned with. Let's say two things. They're concerned with the margin, the profit margin, and velocity. Profit margin and velocity. How fast does it turn over? Multiplied times, how much profit do they make per each or per item? And so they don't care what you're selling. Remember I said before, your customer does not care what it is, whether it's books or bottled water or canned tomatoes or baking pans. They don't care what it is. They only care what it does. And all they want it to do is to turn over rapidly and yield them a profit that enables them to keep on doing it. Of course, they want their customers to be happy because they guarantee their products to their customers. So when you talk to these people, all you focus on is that because of the special features of your product or service, It turns over rapidly. It's profitable for you. And customers are delighted. That's all they really care about, is high turnover, good profit margins, and customers are delighted. Give you an interesting example. My favorite water is Pellegrino. And so I go into a restaurant and I say, could I have a bottle of Pellegrino, please? And it's amazing how many restaurants say, well, we don't carry Pellegrino. Now, we know the Pellegrino rep is called on them. We know that they get requests for Pellegrino all the time. So I ask someone, why is this? They say, well, Pellegrino has lower markups than the other no-name water that people bring to the table. They charge $4 or $5 a bottle. Well, on a bottle of Pellegrino, they may make $2. On the other, they may make $3. So restaurants will not carry Pellegrino because they don't have a high enough markup on the water. And I say, well, then I won't have any at all. And this happens a couple of times, and pretty soon, after a few weeks, they've got Pellegrino because people realize that there's higher velocity. They don't make as much profit, but there'll be greater velocity, be greater turnover if they carry a higher quality water. So that's the point that you have to emphasize in selling a semi-commodity product to a large volume purchaser.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Our next question comes from Curtis. Curtis, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. This might be off the subject a little bit of price, but could you give us one or two tips or ideas about effective cold calling techniques, especially the first 1 or 2, 3 minutes?
Yes. Well, I started off my career. I've had multiple careers where I started off cold calling because I started off in a new city and didn't know anybody, and all I could do was cold call. Often I've done it by telephone, and often I've done it just door to door. So the most important thing I learned, and I have a lot of frustration, is going back to what I was saying, is that customers only care about the benefit or result of your product or service. So my opening has always been focused on the benefit or result. Let me give you an example. I used to sell sales training. So I'd call up and I'd say, who's in charge of sales training? It's Bill Brown. He's the sales manager. Could I speak to him? I say, sure. They say, sure. Put me through. I say, Mr. Brown, my name is Brian Tracy, and I was wondering if you'd be interested in sales training. And they said, nope, not interested. Slam. Don't want it. Don't need it. Can't use it. Can't afford it. Not in the market right now. We're happy with our existing training. We don't have it. We have our own, and so on. You've heard all these things 1,000 times before. And I used to get that over and over again. And, of course, I knew that my product was a fabulous product, was not as good, was better than theirs, and so on. So I finally realized that I'm trying to sell what my product is, and they only want to buy what it does. Does anybody want sales training? No. What do they want? They want higher sales. They want to make more money. They want to make more sales faster because that's how they're what determines their income. And always, by the way, when you're talking to a customer, you have to ask, how does this customer get paid? How does this customer get rewarded? How does this customer get promoted? What is their income, their position, their success, their status, their prestige based on? Because people always, in companies, always buy products or service based on how it's going to improve. Remember the emotion? How it's going to improve how their life is, what the results they get. Will they be more successful? They're supposed to care about the company, but what they're primarily concerned about is what's in it for me personally, as well as the company. So I would say, now, Bill Brown, the sales manager, his income is determined by sales volume. He gets an override. So then I started calling up, and I used these words. I say, Mr. Brown, my name is Brian Tracy. I'm with the Institute for Executive Development, and I was wondering, would you be interested in a way to increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 6 to 12 months, guaranteed? And that would stop them immediately. Well, of course. So what is it? Well, I need about 10 minutes to show you a couple of things that I've showed to other people, and you can decide for yourself. Well, when can you come? I mean, absolutely. I got all the appointments I wanted. I had appointments all day long, cold calling on the phone. When I stopped talking about what I was selling and started talking about what the customer wanted. And in the next 2 months, I did more business than the previous 2 years. And literally went from rags to riches by simply focusing on the does, focusing on what's in it for me, from the point of view of the customer, rather than what's in it for me from my point of view. So give that a try. It takes some phraseology. I work with entrepreneurs and salespeople in our coaching programs, and I'll say, now describe your product in terms of what it does. And they're like drunks collapsing. They say, well, my product does life insurance. No, no, That's what it is. That's not what it does. And they just like drunks falling down. They keep falling back on explaining what it is rather than what it does. And so it's something you need to work on. If you can do that, you can get all the appointments you want.
Great. Our next question comes from Dolly. Please state your question.
Hi, Dolly.
Thank you very much. Hi. The program's been excellent. Thank you very much. One of the biggest responses I get, and this is cold calling, selling an advertising product, is call me back in October. Can't afford it now. Done all my budgeting for the years. I've spent all my hours. My ad budget's in place. Call me January. Call me October. Call me here. Looking for a good rebuttal. That's my most frequent response.
Well, as it happens, we have the same one in our business, and it is because they have budget process, budget procedures. And if you miss the train is gone. If you have not been included into their budget for the coming budget period, then it's very hard to do it. So what we do is our first call is to find out. We'd like to talk to you about how we can help you. What sort of budget process do you have? When do you make these budget decisions, in or out, and so on? And then what you have to do is you have to adjust your time and presentation so that you get there before the budgets are set. If you get there after the budgets are set, and they don't have a lot of control over this. They've got their bosses looking down there over their shoulders. Then you have to wait till the next budget period. And that's always a challenge. We have the same challenge ourselves. We had it with a Fortune 500 company recently. As we got to them, you know, just like a week after their budget had closed, they said, geez, we love your product, but budget's closed. We can't look at it until next year. And so the starting point is, and by the way, the key, Dolly, you make a lot of calls. As you'll find, most people make their budget, do their budgets, especially bigger companies, in the fall for the coming year. But another thing is you can work with companies that are smaller, if that's possible. And smaller companies tend to be more flexible. And if you can show, and this is really important, if you can show that your product or service will pay for itself quite quickly, like it's a good investment, it has a high rate of return. There was an article in Forbes magazine recently, and they said, talking about high tech or any product or service, they said the key buying determinant is not time to market, it's time to pay back. And what companies will pay for immediately, and they will find the money, is time to pay back. If you can show them that the payback on your product or service is very fast, in other words, they get a very high return, then they will make money, and they'll make room in the budget. They can actually borrow money to buy a product if they're convinced that its contribution to their revenues will be far greater than its cost in a short period of time. So that's another way that you can get around the budget limitation. They can actually expand the budget if they're convinced that your product will pay for itself quickly. So give that a try.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Thanks, Dolly.
Our next question comes from Hamid. Please state your question.
Brian, how are you?
Hi.
I'm in new home sales in Houston, and my product has routinely been priced probably anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000 more than my competitor right next door.
Yes.
And so, you know, a lot of these things I've worked on, and I'm doing all right with those as far as, you know, focusing the benefits, etc. But coming into this new year, I'm finding it's becoming harder and harder to get the people to commit now.
Yes.
And going forward, I'm trying to figure out how can I continue excelling at what we're doing and still, you know, maintain the sales pace that I've had. And still be that much higher than my competitor.
Well, okay, there's two or three different points here. The first point is that this is happening all over the country. Almost all the big home builders are taking a hit in both projected sales, revenues, earnings, and so on, and they're having to cut the prices of their homes right down to no profit. Places where they overbuilt, they're willing to sell the house just to get it out of inventory and break even.
Exactly.
So that's happening a lot. Another thing, of course, you see a lot of people are walking away from their deposits because they thought the home would go up in value before it was finished construction. But another thing that you can do, that's the negative side. The positive side is, as I said in our remarks a few minutes ago, is give reasons for higher price. give reasons for a higher price. The person has to see that there is a very definite benefit to them for paying a higher price. You have granite countertops. You have higher quality appliances and utilities. You have better floor plan. One of the things that you might do, just a thought, is whenever I look at a house, I create a mental picture. And the mental picture is imagine a box of flour at the front door, and every person who walks in steps in the flour and then walks around the house. Well, if a house is laid out well so that it's eminently usable, then there will be flour all over the house. If a house is not laid out well, there will be whole parts of the house where nobody walks, nobody goes. So people are actually paying for us, but this often happens with living rooms, formal living rooms. Nobody goes into the living room. And so therefore, you have this living room that's 600 square feet, and nobody ever uses it. As opposed to a family room, hallways, bathrooms, kitchens, and things like that. So it's one of the ways that you can show that it's not just the size of the house you buy, but it's the usability of the house. And our houses are designed by some of the most brilliant architects in the world in terms of usability. So you can actually pay more for one of our houses because you are getting more usable space, even though it's the same amount of space. I'm just throwing that out as an idea. But the critical reason is to give reasons for higher price. Give reasons for a higher price so that when they go away and they have the information from you and from your competitors, they will know why your prices are higher and why it is better for them in terms of enjoyment, use, resale value, everything else. It is a better decision to buy from you than someone else. And make sure that they're clear about that when they leave. And that should help you. At least give it a try.
Okay. Well, that's a good point. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Questions.
I'm done. That was good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You have the operator.
I apologize. Yes, I apologize. Robert, please state your question.
Hi, I'm working for Xerox, and I'm selling photocopiers to federal government.
Yes.
And the market is very tender-based, and they're trying to move it in towards a commodity, saying, okay, we just want a photocopier regardless of what it is. So How do you think that we could deal with that, and in terms of trying to set the criteria to a different level?
Well, the challenge that you've experienced, Robert, is when you deal with the government, you're dealing with a pure price buyer.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, the constraints within the bureaucracy demand that they get the lowest price, and they don't care about anything else. They don't care about you. They don't care about your company. They don't care about Xerox being a great company. And they don't care about the actual product itself. They believe that they're all commodities, and they all do the same thing. So the only chance that you have is by getting a better understanding of how the product is going to be used, how the copier is going to be used for a particular application, and then being able to show that the specific features that your copier offers make it a superior choice for this application,
mm-hmm.
for this particular department. For example, this department might do a lot of mailings. Therefore, a two-sided copier can dramatically cut down on their postage costs and their paper costs. This particular department may do a lot of reports, so therefore a collator that you have may make this a better choice, and a collator that has a far better track record for service and so on may be a better choice, so therefore it's more desirable to have your particular product than one that lacks that particular feature. But the critical thing, and in sales, the one thing we do as salespeople is differentiate. That is the inner game of selling, is we somehow demonstrate to the customer's satisfaction that our product or service is different and superior in some way to that of our competitors. If we can't do that, then the purchaser has no choice but to compare apples to apples and just see us as a commodity. And what we have found is whenever your competitors approach a government department with a proposal and so on, they see you all as a commodity. As far as they're concerned with, you're Tweedledum and Tweedledee. Your job is to find a way for them to see the others as commodities, but to see your product as something special. And if you can't do that, then you just get lumped together as a commodity. And that's where the art of selling comes. And sometimes you find it by asking really good questions, by going in depth to the actual users of the product or service and finding out what is most important to them. If you can do that, if you can get past the bureaucrats to the users, that's often a way of differentiating yourself.
Sure. And often we'd speak to the office managers or procurement managers who are sort of like middle management, and that they do all the getting the information and working out what the criteria is, but the final decision is made by their boss or their boss's boss or a board of directors.
Yes.
So is it, like, what's the best way to kind of jump above that office administrator level and go straight to the top?
Well, it's almost impossible. There's a rule. It's almost like a concrete ceiling is wherever you start, you can't get any higher.
Okay.
I've found that all my life in business or in government, if you start at this managerial level, you never get above that managerial level. That person has to carry the water for you. So a question that we ask is, if you know that this person doesn't make the decision, but they influence the person who does, then what you do is you say, how do you like what I've shown you so far on a scale of 1 to 10? You use a 1 to 10 scale. They say, well, it looks pretty good. I said, on a 1 to 10, how do you feel about it? Well, I'm 7 or 8. Now, a 7 or 8 will not get you the sale, but at least it's better than a 3 or a 4. So then you ask this follow-up question, is what would have to happen for this offering to be at a 10 in your mind? What would have to happen for it to be a 10 in your mind? And they'll say, well, if you could do this, or you could add that, or you could take away this, or you, in other words, if possible, they will say, this, if you could do this, it would be a 10 for me. If you can get it so it's 10, you can say, you know, we've done that in the past for some of our special clients. We could probably do that for you. If we could do that for you, would it be a 10? They say, yes, if you could do that for us, it would be a 10. Then that person will become what is called your product champion, your customer champion. They will champion your choice, your offering, over the others. They will go up above them, and they'll tell the people above them, this is the one we should have. And what
That's
I have
great.
Found in businesses is that top people don't make those buying decisions. If somebody comes from down below and says, I really want this photocopier, we really like it, it's got this particular benefit, it'll do this for us, and so on, we say, okay, if that's the one you want, then that's the one we'll get for you. Because the people who you think are the big decision makers are completely divorced from making the decision on the photocopier or the computer or something else. You've got to get the person to a 10 by asking them on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? What would it take to get you to a 10? And if we could get you to a 10, would you recommend it? And if you get them to a 10, they will fight for you internally. They will argue, they'll debate, they'll go to the committee, they'll fight for you. And that's the best strategy you can use.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Good luck to you, Robert.
Great. Our next question comes from Thor. Please state your question.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. It's a very good seminar.
Thank you, Thor.
I'm calling from Iceland. My company is in the e-marketing business.
Yes.
And we often have to face prospects that haven't heard of our products and services.
Yes.
And we need to not only convince them to that they have to use our services, and it's in their good, what can I say, that's for their good. But we also have to convince them to use us and do it soon.
Yes.
Do you have any recommendation on how we should approach customers like that?
Well, what I have found that works the best is, you know, there's an old saying about television, Thor. It says that the video medium is designed to be focused on a single face. The video medium, television, is designed to be focused on a single face. And when they start to use wide scenes, you find that it never works well. Well, coming back to the internet medium is designed to be written to a single person. And that's why, you know, there are some speakers who speak very loud as if they're addressing a church congregation. But the very best speakers speak as though they're speaking just to one person in the audience. And what I find that works is when you open up your message to your customer, you say, we got a letter yesterday that we're very proud of. So-and-so says, you know, Arne Sigurdsson says, and then quote a positive letter talking about your product or service and how and what it did to improve the life or work of the customer. Human beings love to read stories or letters or quotes from other people. And what that does is it, you always have a quote that has somebody saying, talking about a benefit they got that this customer will get if they buy your product or service. And then you can say, and so what we did is when we first talked to them, and you tell a story, an email, a story on email about a happy customer or happy customers with quotes from the customers are very, very powerful. People will delete an advertising message, but they will read a story. And then as you get further down, you say, if you would like us to do the same things for you that we did for Arnie, please click on this link, get this free information, let us send you a report, and so on. Now that brings us to another thing, is that one of the things that we do with our internet is we offer free information. And sometimes the simplest form of information, you probably do this, is to offer 10 points, 10 ideas. You say, for the 10 most important things you can do to save time or money in your field, please download this special report. And it can be one page, or it can be two pages, just 10 pieces of advice. People love to get information that helps them to do their work better. So maybe you have 10 time management tips or 10 ways to handle email tips or 10 ways to organize your day tips. You know, people love to get information that helps them to do their work better. So if you offer them that, then they will take you up on it and you make it no strings attached. And then you go back in 3 days, we say, you hope you enjoyed the 10 tips. We have some other things that might help you as well. And then you can go back and offer your product or service or tell a story and so on. Also, remember that in order to get people's attention, you may have to send 6 or 7 letters, each one a little bit different, each one with a different story, each one encouraging them to contact you for more information. If you just send out one letter, very often it just gets deleted. But if you send out 6 or 7 letters, people start to develop an association. They've heard from you in the past. Your credibility goes up. They're more familiar with you. They'll start to read the message a little bit more closely. And sometimes it'll take 6 or 7 letters before they'll actually click and ask for more information. So give those ideas a try.
Okay. But most of our customers are companies that
you
contact directly via phone.
Yes, but it's actually a person. It's a person that you're sending the email to.
Yeah.
So you have to think about the person.
Okay.
And you always think, is this person wants to be more successful at their work? All right? So what is it that your product does that will help them to be more successful at their work? And then write the letter directly to them. Would you like to be more successful in this area? Would you like to accomplish greater results faster with less time and effort? You know, focus on what your product or service does rather than what it is. And because people are always interested in themselves. And so if you will send a message that offers to help that person improve their life or work, then they'll read on. And then you have a quotation from someone who used your product who's happy with it. And then they'll read further. You know, the rule in advertising is called the rule of descending importance, which means that the very first line is the most important because that will determine whether the customer reads the second line. And then the second line is the second most important because that determines whether the customer will read the third line. Some of the best advertisements, and I work with specialists in this area, will be very short lines with short paragraphs, maybe 1 or 2 sentences in a paragraph, lots of white space so people can read easily. Many people will write a letter and the letter will be a large paragraph of information and people just instantly delete it. And don't try to sell your product or service on the internet. Instead, is try to get interest in the benefits or results of using your product or service so they call you and they say, what is it? How does it do that? How does it save us time or money? And so you don't go into detail on your product. You just go into detail on what it does. And some of the best advertising will just list 10 things that your product or service will do for your customer, and doesn't even talk about the service at all. Just talks about all the things all the benefits. And the more benefits you talk about, the more interested people are about learning more.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I ask you another question? Or?
Well, one more question. Okay.
Okay. When we are talking to prospects, and maybe it's the second meeting or something, and we think we are getting pretty well along, and we might be talking to webmasters, for example, that suddenly say, well, okay, I think I'll just do it myself.
Ah.
I think I will just do this optimization for my website myself, but they really haven't the expertise to do it, but they think they have.
Right. Well, one of the things that we do, and you can, and anybody who's listening can do this, you say, what is your hourly rate? And they say, what? Well, if you earn $50,000 a year, your hourly rate is $25 to $30. If you earn $100,000 a year, your hourly rate is, you know, $50 to $60. So that's your hourly rate. How many hours would this take for you to do it yourself? And is that a good investment of your time? And say that. Is that a good investment of your time? Because it's much cheaper for you to buy something that's already complete and ready to go than to do it yourself. And emphasize that their specialization is their business. Our specialty is designing these programs. So what you should do is much easier. You let us do what we do, and you do what you do, and it's going to be much cheaper for you than doing it yourself. And just emphasize that.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very informative. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Thor.
Our next question comes from Michael. Michael, please state your question.
Sure. Thank you, Brian. Great job tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
Brian, I represent the IT staff augmentation company. Are you familiar with what that is?
Is that a professional staff organization?
Basically, we have an Oracle developer.
Okay.
And Walmart would need that Oracle developer for 6 months.
Yes, I see.
My question is twofold. One is, how do I convey a unique selling proposition, which we're having a problem defining that?
Yes.
Because everyone says that they're customer service orientated.
Yes.
And the second question is, when I'm on the phone with that decision maker, how do I get to meet the decision maker? I do well once I'm in front of them, thanks to you. So there's my question.
Okay, well, there are several approaches to the answer. The first is to emphasize something that other people don't emphasize. I was speaking to a Fortune 500 group of executives recently on a teleconference, and they were saying all their competitors emphasize quality and service, quality and service, quality and service. And so everybody goes in and says, we give the best quality and service. And so what they do is they differentiate, and they offer a greater variety of ways to satisfy the customer in a cost-effective way, in addition to quality and service. But what we do is we customize our solutions far more to our customers, and they are the biggest in the world, the biggest in the nation, and continue to grow. They run circles around their competitors and just keep saying quality and service. So you have to emphasize something that they're not. You know, the old saying, hit them where they ain't, and pick something that you want to own. Now, one of the great ways of thinking about selling, especially to a company like Walmart, is to ask, what are their primary fears? What are their primary fears in using your specialists, using your contract engineers and planners and so on? Well, their biggest fear is that it'll take too much time or more time than it should, and they'll get overcharged. You know, Walmart especially is very careful about expenditures. So you could actually emphasize that, you know, we have our philosophy. If I was your consultant, I would say, you know, our philosophy is to do the job as quickly and as inexpensively as possible so that we can get more work from you. Some companies, their philosophy is to get as many hours as possible. Our philosophy is actual subsequent work. And we think that we can get more work, and it's proven in our experience, we can get more work by satisfying your need here faster than someone else with the same level of quality. Now, how do you get to the key decision makers? Well, one of the very best ways revolves around the word philosophy. you say, I would like to talk just for a few minutes to your president and explain to him our philosophy of doing business. This is something that really only he can make a decision on, because the president of the company, or she for that matter, is the one who articulates the philosophy of the company. So therefore, we need to get agreement on, that we have the right, that we are on the same page, that we have the same philosophy or approach to this business. And by asking for a brief meeting to get into harmony with the company's philosophy, we need to know your philosophy, you need to know our philosophy, if we're going to work together for maximum benefit and at the lowest possible cost. Very often, the top people will see you to discuss philosophy, or at least higher up people will see it. And you can ask them, you know, what is your basic philosophy in this company? What is your basic mission? And this is a high-level discussion. This is not a low-level discussion. And then you say, well, our philosophy is repeat business. Our philosophy is to satisfy our customers so well that they voluntarily choose to work with us again in the future. And we know that companies like yourself are very concerned about expenditure. So we do everything possible to minimize the number of hours that our specialists will spend on this account, rather than trying to stretch them out, which other people do. You know, it's their philosophy. Our philosophy is to do it quickly and inexpensively. Something like that separates you, because they, when you walk away, they'll remember you forever.
That's great. Thank you so much, Brian. You're the best.
Thank you. You're the best. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Our next question.
Yes.
One moment, please. Comes from Flo. Flo, please state your question.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian, for terrific information.
Thank you.
I think we should say
I have the same question for two different prospective customers.
Yes.
How do I move forward these customers and address the first one, who tells me that she is interested in my product, which is a residential health product?
Right.
And will buy by a certain date.
Right.
Then upon follow-up on that date, she cites that she had forgotten a previous financial commitment and had to take care of that, but she will definitely buy soon.
Yes.
That's the first customer.
Yes.
Should I tell you the second one, sir?
Well, no, but you know, a lot of people, because they don't want to hurt your feelings, they won't tell you that they're not going to buy. They just always have an excuse. And so one of the things you have to do is say, is this really a good customer for us? If your product or service, or if your services are good, people should want them right now. If they don't want them right now, they should be able to find a way to buy them right now. But if they put off the decision for any period of time, the chances that they are that they will never buy them at all. They just don't really want them. But they don't want to tell you that you're a nice person. They don't want to offend you. They don't want you to know that they can't afford it. So they just keep delaying, and it drives you crazy. And it's not a good use of your time.
Okay, so are you saying not to bother to even follow up?
No, not to bother. Say, great, that's wonderful. As soon as you get things under control, please call me, and we'll get it set up. Give them a business card.
Okay.
And nothing, and you'll never hear from them again.
And this is even though they fill out the order form and leave it with me?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the deepest craving in human nature is to feel important. People need to feel important. And so what they do is they fill out the form, and you pay attention to them, and you call them up and so on, and they feel important. And they don't feel they have to do anything other than that. So they don't buy.
Okay. Now, the other customer acknowledges the benefits, expresses the desire to acquire the unit, has sort of tried it out, and definitely saw benefits. But first wants to pay down credit card debt.
Then they don't really want your product. Sounds, you know, I learned this many years ago. It changed my whole selling life. I found that at the end of the sales presentation, the customer knows everything they're ever going to know about buying your product or service. They know all they know. They're not going to know something more later. And if their buying desire is not high enough to make the decision at the end of your presentation, it never will be, because as soon as you leave, their buying desire goes down. I say it's very much like putting a pot of water on the stove until it boils. And as soon as that's the end of the sales presentation, the water is as hot as it's going to get. As soon as you leave, the water is taken off the stove, and it goes cold, and it just gets cooler and cooler and cooler. And when you go back, the customer is cold. They have no further interest. They don't even remember why they were interested in the first place. So the best is to qualify the customers well and then give a good presentation and ask them to make a decision one way or another. We used to use what I used to call an ultimatum close, and it was very simple. You say, Mr. Prospect, I know how busy you are, so I'm going to show you something which is really wonderful for you and for many other people. At the end of my presentation, would you tell me one way or another if you like it or not? And they'll always say, well, yes, okay. And then you give your presentation, and at the end, they can tell you one way or another. They say, well, let me think about it. Well, Mr. Prospect, you promised me you would tell me one way or another, yes or no. And I would really appreciate it if you did it. So I don't take up any more of your time, and you don't take up any more of my time. And we force them to get an answer right there, because they'll never know more than they're going to know. When I was cold calling, I remember people would say, well, let me think about it. I say, Mr. Prospect, there's really nothing to think about. You know everything you're going to know right now to make a decision. Why don't you just take it? And they say, well, okay, you're right. And I used to make sale after sale by telling them they don't need to think about it. There's nothing to think about. They already know everything they're going to know. So that's the way. And you only have to do that once or twice before you start to feel comfortable with it. The first time you do it, you'll be uncomfortable. The second or third time, you feel very comfortable with it. And you'll ask them to make a decision. And it'll save you so much time and heartache. Because I can feel the frustration in your voice. Because I've been there. Of people who won't say yes, and they won't say no. And they won't say yes, and they won't say no. And they won't say yes. Drives you crazy.
Okay. My last question. My company offers installment plans.
Yes.
Do I present that when I present the price? Do I just present the price as it is? And if they ask for the install, whether they are alternate payment plans, do I give it then, or do I present everything up front?
Well, the best is to give them an alternate close. It's called the alternate closing technique. What you do is you say, now, you can pay for this one of two ways. You can pay for it on a monthly basis, or you can pay for it all at once. Which one would you prefer? Which one would be most convenient for you? And whichever one they choose, you've made a sale.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take one more question, and then we'll be on our way.
Our next question comes from Steve. Please state your question.
Steve?
Hey, I wanted you to know, kind of on a side note, I've enjoyed your material. Matter of fact, the first sales training product that I bought was your Psychology of Selling 6 cassette package, and I've had it for about 15 years.
Yes.
Anyway, my question to you is this. I'm an inside sales, and one of the things that kind of annoys me a bit is the fact that people don't leave messages, and I've structured a message, you know, to kind of appeal to a benefit of to sell what the product does and not to what it is.
Right.
And I'm just kind of frustrated. I know people probably get a lot of messages from salespeople that don't do it the proper way, but what sort of advice might you give somebody about leaving messages, or is leaving messages on an answering machine a good idea in a business setting anyway?
Well, sometimes you have no choice. And so, therefore, you have to be able to leave a message, ask a question, offer a benefit that connects. The person has to say, and here is two pieces of advice for leaving a message. The first advice is the message should trigger the instant response, that's for me. Oh, I want that. That's for me. Mm-hmm. I'll call them right back. If it doesn't trigger that response, then you need to rework the message until it does trigger that response from a qualified prospect. The second is a little picture that you should have with regard to does versus is. And imagine you sit on an airplane next to another business person, and the business person turns to you and says, what do you do for a living? And you say, I do this. and you explain what your product or service does. And it is so impactful that the person turns in their seat and says, geez, how do you do that? Now, if the message you're leaving is not triggering that response from a qualified prospect, then you need to go back to the drawing board. And why? It's because most of your message is what your product is. Oh, I've got to tell them what it is so they know what I'm calling about. No, you have to talk about what it does. And I'll give you an example. If you, I can get anybody in the world to call me back first when they get their messages. I can give you a whole bunch of examples. I've got about 300 pages of research on this. Very simple. I call up, hello, my name is Brian Tracy. I'm calling from the Western State Lottery Association, and you've just won $1 million. Could you please call me back and tell me where you want the money sent? And I can guarantee you that I'll be called back first every single time. Now, the point that I'm making is what I've done is I have connected with a benefit that the prospect has. The prospect will respond like a switchblade to that benefit. You have to have a similar mental approach. How could I phrase the benefits of what I offer for this person who wants these benefits in such a way that they call me right back? And you always have to realize if they're not calling you back, you need to go back to the drawing boards. Your message is obviously not correct. Remember this, if you're calling businesses, there's only two concerns that business people have. They're to save or gain time or money. Save or gain time or money. There's save time or make more money. Save or gain time or money. And if your message is not dealing with saving and or gaining time and or money, then they'll just beep and delete it. That's just the way the world is. It's the way you are. What are the messages you don't respond to? Right?
Very true.
Yeah, very true. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for being on the line. I hope this has been helpful to you. And I very much look forward to our next time together.
You're the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.